doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Circling the Bases. My name is Chris Crawford. I'm joined today, as kind of always, with my buddies Drew Silva and DJ Short. Fellas, how are we doing today?
Doing all right. Hanging in there.
Yeah. I'll wait until make our... Well, no, let's just do it now. Drew, do we owe everyone an apology for the Notre Dame-Clemson thing? Because we were pretty negative, and it turned out to be quite the butt-kicking for the guys that we were rooting for.
Yeah. We don't owe them an apology. I was impressed, man. The Irish have been playing better and better, which is what you want to see. I wish they would have avoided. Who did they lose to early on? Was it Marshall?
Marshall and Stanford, man. That's just that's college football right now. There's so much parity except for those big four teams. But I had to address that. I am wearing, for those of you watching on Twitch, my Notre Dame stuff. I have been quite proud, and I will continue to do so until they get their butt kicked by USC. Coming up on this show, we are going to do a whole bunch of stuff. We are going to recap the World Series very quickly. Then we're going to start shifting into off-season mode. We're going to be talking about a big free agent signing that has already happened, looking at some teams that could be making some big moves, some potential trade candidates. And then as well, we're going to be doing recapping a 30-person draft, basically 10 rounds between the three of us. That's going to be really fun and a fun look into the 2023 season. But before we get started, download the RotoWorld app right now if you haven't done so to receive breaking news all season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoriting players on your roster. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right now to your phone. It is available in your app store today. So let's talk about that World Series, because it ended a few days ago, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it, and we like to talk about stuff. Astros win in six, as we all predicted before the start of the season.
We did.
And then we'll pretend that middle thing, that was the swamp season in Community. That is that we don't remember anything about what happened afterwards. Although Drew and I did pick the Astros to win in seven, so we were just a game off. DJ, your Phillies love shined through, and you had to make that switch. I can't blame you. It's just one of those things that but it was, I thought, one of the most impressive postseason teams that I've seen in this Houston Astros, and it goes along with a team that won a bunch of regular season games. One of the most impressive World Series runs, I think. The Philadelphia run is also extremely impressive and goes to show you that you can be a team that is built to do better in the postseason than I think in the regular season. Start with you, DJ. Just your quick thoughts on the overall on that World Series.
Well, I think the best team won. So, anybody that would be complaining about the format of the postseason, like the Phillies just snuck in with the final wild card, and then we'd be hearing all these takeaways about how flawed the postseason is.
Sure.
The best team won, even if a lot of people don't like that team. From top to bottom, I think, the Dodgers were a very, historic win total.
Sure.
Very good team as well. A team that I think was built for postseason success, too. It just didn't happen, but that's just what happens with small sample sizes. But, the Astros are a great team.
Sure.
And that's how it played out. I was – when I said Phillies in six or seven, whatever I said last week.
Seven,
That was like my pessimism, coming through as a Mets fan. It was just all the doom and gloom. But now I can say the Phillies blew it.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. Yeah. They kind of did. They had a 2-1 lead, and it really looked like, and this is, I think, further proof, by the way, that momentum is nonsense, because all momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. And Christian Javier was excellent in game four. Yeah. Drew, your thoughts on the series?
I mean, the Astros, they felt inevitable, especially once you saw those NL juggernauts start dropping off. It was like the Astros are clearly the best team still remaining. But I liked them so much in the early part of the postseason because of the condensed schedule and the pitching depth that they had. Like, they would be the best equipped to ride this out. But the way it played out, they had so many breaks that they didn't really have to dig too far into that depth until they got to the World Series. And that's when it really came through and flipped that series from that the time we talked last Wednesday till the final result on Saturday night. Just really impressed with them. They're easy to hate because of the stink of what happened in 2017 and
and
maybe some other years as well. But you got to tip your cap. It's just a very well-built club. I'm still concerned about what's going on with general manager James Click.
Yeah.
You know, they announced this afternoon that Dusty Baker's extension for 2023 would be official, but Click's name was not on the press release at all.
Very interesting.
Owner Jim Crane said that he needs Click to come back from the GM meetings in Vegas to iron out where they stand. But it's like, is he at the GM meetings representing your club, or is he there trying to find a new job? It's it's weird. I it's hard to tell the relationship between an owner and a GM, because, you know, they don't talk to the media about it, or they don't talk as much in general as like a manager or a player does. So it's really hard to read the tea leaves on that situation, but nonetheless, what they built there is incredible. And man, they've got a core that's just going to keep going. Like, and they can spend more money than they did last offseason. It was not like a top five payroll. Well, they were like 10th, I think, in payroll.
Give or take.
Right. They were like just inside the top 10, I believe, in payroll. And so, you know, they can flex a little cash this winter too, to shore up maybe center field, you know, get some, they've got a young pitching core. They're set up for a lot of success. Sorry to your Mariners. That's going to be a tough climb there in the American League West.
I honestly, Jerry DePoto should be working on trading the Seattle Mariners to the NL Central, because or something like that, because that's the biggest issue right now, or any other division really, because like I would put that team, it would not shock me at all if the Seattle Mariners had the second best record in the American League and finished second in the division by a substantial margin. They do have some holes, and we can talk about the fact that they do have Justin Verlander will be a free agent. And but I think that's really interesting. An important question, since you brought up cash. Do you guys believe that Mattress Mack actually lost money on his $75 million bet?
I don't know how those things all work. I've read a little bit into it, like in the past, and I know it's all insured to a level where he never really loses money. It's just free marketing.
Right.
And the money that he does lose, I'm sure he makes up just.
I think he's doing
He becomes a national, even global story. And for like a guy that owns, I don't know if they have one location or multiple locations, but for just like a mattress store guy, like I buy my mattresses online. Like I don't even, who goes to a mattress store?
Not many people. No. I mean,
That is why there is a location where I live, near where I live anyway, that has been like 14 different furniture stores, because I think they just,
I've always thought they were like a front for something.
People are saying,
and by the way,
Punch Drunk Love one time and all of a sudden,
great movie. But by the way, Chris, you offered to trade, the Mariners to the National League Central, or was it the American League Central?
I said National League Central.
Okay. Well, you can have Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff and, O'Neill Cruz. And we'll take the Mariners.
That's totally fair.
Okay, thank you.
Let's take a look at this offseason when we already had a pretty big move. Edwin Diaz is staying with DJ's New York Mets. 5 years, $102 million. Diaz, obviously one of the best closers in baseball, but this is the first time a reliever has gotten that nine-figure contract. We'll have DJ go last on this one, but Drew, just your thoughts on Edwin Diaz and your thoughts on that contract and what it means for 2023 and beyond.
makes a lot of sense for a team that seems to have an unlimited payroll. The year sure. that he came off showed a lot more consistency than he has sometimes there in Queens. And for me personally, like, it's nice when closer situations are set before we have to submit our profiles for the annual magazine that we write, because often they are not. And so it's nice to have that one locked in. And
yeah.
You know, you can do an early fantasy draft and you know that Diaz should probably be the top pitcher, the top reliever off the board, or at least, you know, one of the top two or three.
Yeah.
So I like it in that aspect. And I think it just makes sense. It's a lot of money for a reliever, but he is younger than people probably think, because he debuted at a relatively young age. And
right.
He's dominant, and I expect him to be that. Maybe the back end of the deal doesn't look so hot. He could blow out his arm at any point, but from where we stand right now, it makes sense for a team that has that large of a payroll.
And also, the Mets basically have to rebuild their entire pitching staff, both rotation and bullpen, this winter. In addition to Diaz, Adam Ottavino is a free agent, Seth Lugo, Trevor May, and basically like three of their starters are in free agency now too, and maybe four if they decline the option on Carrasco. So I think re-signing Diaz was the A number one priority, which, you know, shows in what happened here. Just to get that out of the way, I mean, because if you look in free agency, we'll get more into the free agents in a little bit, but really the alternatives there, if it wasn't Diaz, there's Kenley Jansen, there's, I believe Robert Suarez opted out of his contract with the Padres, right? There's Craig Kimbrell, you know, it's not a pretty list. So
right.
I think that was a must for the Mets, and to get out there, get it done quickly before the market even officially opens. I think that's a huge sigh of relief for, again, this is a team that's going to be making a lot of changes this offseason.
For sure. And I think getting him done early was important too. Like, just getting that out of the way for the reasons that you just said. I will point out, like, with Edwin Diaz, who I've gotten a chance to watch an awful lot since he started with the Mariners. I guess he was traded to the Mets. It was a deal of some sort. I don't think it was talked about very much.
Slipped under the radar. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting looking at him. I'm just looking at his baseball reference page now, and this is the ERA plus by year. 146, 128, 208, 74, 246, 117, 297. So Edwin Diaz does have a little bit of a Brett Saberhagen thing going on here. For those of you who are too young to get that reference, or maybe too old to get that reference. Saberhagen was a guy who every other year seemed to dominate, and then every other year, not so much. Now, obviously, an ERA of plus of 117 is far from bad, and reliever ERA always has to be taken with a big heaping thing of salt, because it just takes one bad outing for your ERA to be you know what it for the entire year. But I think it was a really solid signing. And who cares about the 5-year thing? Honestly, like, the New York Mets are going to be just fine. Steven Cohen is going to be just fine. I would much rather overpay Edwin Diaz in 2028 or whenever the heck that deal dies than not have Edwin Diaz. If that's what it takes to get an absolutely elite closer signed, you got to do it.
And the other thing about that deal, there's an opt-out after the third season.
Right.
Who knows? You know, anything could happen in the next 3 years. He could be hurt. He could be terrible. Whatever. But if, let's say he keeps going and he's just as dominant, there's a chance he'll opt out. And if that happens, I think both sides should be happy with the outcome of that deal. Yeah. That's usually what an opt-out entails if the player takes it. So, you know, let's just worry about it down the road. You shouldn't be worried about 5 years from now. It's about what the Mets look like in 2023. And at least they have a name they can rely on at the end of games. And that's in place going into the offseason.
Okay, so let's go over some dates real quick. So free agents, the official market opens on Thursday. That is also the deadline for option decisions and qualifying offers from teams. Next Tuesday is the day that teams have to set 40-man rosters before the Rule 5 draft. It's actually a big one this year. There are several top 10 prospects that need to be added to rosters. Especially the Tampa Bay Rays have a bunch of guys that they're going to have to make tough decisions. Next Friday is the non-tender deadline day. So those players that teams don't want to pay, that would be the day for that. And then Sunday, November 20th, is deadline for qualifying offer free agents to decide whether to accept or decline. So we have educated you. There is no excuse to get this wrong. We will have a quiz that we post on RotoWorld to make sure that you have all of the correct information. I think this market has to start with Aaron Judge, because I looked it up and there have not been a lot of guys who have hit 62 home runs and then hit the free agent market. It just doesn't seem to happen very often.
Yeah.
But I think this is a really interesting class, and I recommend everybody go check out Matthew Pouliot's top 111 free agent list. Just Google that or search for it in our RotoWorld app. It's fantastic information, and it's a great breakdown of where we could be seeing some guys go and some rankings as well. But I'm pretty intrigued by this class. Are you guys?
Yeah, it's pretty, yeah. Pretty stacked.
It's stacked and it's deep, man. I mean, the shortstop class last winter was excellent. The shortstop class this year is excellent. There aren't a ton of like outfielders, and there's a lot of teams that need outfield help. The catcher market is pretty thin outside of Wilson Contreras. I'm expecting a lot of trades too. I think it's going to be a wild off season because if you remember last year, after December 1st, baseball went into a shutdown until
did it?
March 17th or when, I don't even know when the lockout was lifted that. Let's just all forget about it. Actually,
I'm fine with that.
But yeah, there's a lot of high end talent here, and there's going to be big dollars being thrown around. I feel like, and baseball had a very healthy year financially. I think Rob Manfred said $11 billion in total revenue. There are teams that are ready to take a step forward. All the talk from the GM meetings, like, you know, the Reds, the Pirates, oh, we're going to, the Cubs, those are just NL Central teams. We're going to spend, like, we're ready to turn the tide on this. And a lot of that is GM speak, and we'll see.
Sure.
There are teams in that position that have, you know, been tanking or rebuilding for a couple of years and feel like they got to make the move at some, you can't tank forever unless I guess you're the Pirates, but even they feel like they have the young talent to now actually go spend some money.
Yeah. And the other thing about the tanking is like, it's not even a really effective strategy anymore because of the draft lottery. If you have the worst record, you can't like do what the Nationals did back when they got Strasburg and Harper back-to-back years. Like, that is a thing of the past. I mean, you may have a higher percentage if you had the worst record, but as we know in the NBA, it doesn't always work out that way. New York Knicks. Except the one year they got Patrick Ewing, which was a total fraud.
Which, by the way, speaking of Patrick Ewing, the headline that just kind of almost broke my heart, because I loved Georgetown basketball as a kid. Georgetown broke a 21-game losing streak last night against Coppin State in overtime.
That's wild.
So weird.
That's so odd. Because, like, I think everybody loved watching like Allen Iverson and Alonzo Mourning, if you're old enough, and those guys play at Jeff Green, even at Georgetown. Those were such fun teams. It is very odd to see them where they are. Just looking at the top five free agents on Pouliot's list right here. We've got Aaron Judge, of course, which we just talked about. Carlos Correa at number two, Trey Turner, three, Xander Bogaerts at four, and Jacob DeGrom at five. So we're all big fans of teams here, especially me for my grandma. Everybody should be rooting for the Mariners for my grandma. Drew and DJ, I'm sure they have nice family members too. I'll start with you, Drew. If you could have the Cardinals land any of those big five, which one would it be?
I only get to pick one.
You only get to pick one.
They have a huge hole at shortstop, and they had it last winter and didn't do anything about it. So, I mean, give me Trey Turner. He would be number two on if I were ranking these free agents.
Yeah.
And if you read through Matthew's explanations, I get why he has Correa at two as well. But
absolutely.
I would want Trey Turner as a guy you can plug in at leadoff and just brings every element that you could ask for. He would be perfect. And I also want Judge and DeGrom on the card. And Wilson Contreras to replace Molina behind the plate.
Oh, that would be amazing. Cub fans.
Great offseason plan.
Such a
love fit. It.
Yeah.
It's not my money.
All right.
Cool. DJ, let's assume that DeGrom actually does come back, which I actually think is going to happen. I don't know why, but I just think that's going to be something that takes place. But of those big four, then, is there anybody you'd like to see the Mets bring in?
I mean, I don't see why the Mets wouldn't be in on Aaron Judge.
Sure.
I, Why not?
Well, you know, because I mean, they don't want to break the friendship between the Yankees and the Mets.
Of course.
Yeah, we don't. We don't want
a long-standing friendship between the Mets and the Yankees for a long time. But yeah. I mean, Brandon Nimmo's a free agent. Starling Marte could play center field.
Sure.
I mean, if you're the thing about DeGrom is like it's going to cost a lot of money to keep him. There's the injury history there.
Yeah.
If I had my choice between DeGrom and Judge, I would take Aaron Judge. And I don't think their yearly salaries are going to be that different. Obviously, it's going to be – you're going to have to give 8 years to Aaron Judge probably. But right. the AAV is probably not going to be that different.
I would imagine not. Yeah.
So for me, I mean, I'd rather have Judge. Plus, I think the Mets need more power in their lineup anyways. I want Jacob DeGrom back, but it's obvious – that there's a huge risk associated with him at this point.
No, there's no question about it. I mean, that is the thing. Is Aaron Judge going to be able to handle playing 135 or so games for an 8-year contract? It'll be very, he hasn't really shown that he could do it. Now he stayed healthy all year and look what happened when he did. And I think people forget that he was really good in 2021 as well. A 6-win player that year. He's been worth 16 wins over the last couple of seasons. For my Mariners, I want Xander Bogaerts so bad. I think he makes so much sense for them. I think that Xander Bogaerts, a lot of people I think are pointing towards him returning to Boston. I don't think people realize just how bad that low ball offer was and just how far apart apparently those camps are. My son, JP Crawford, I love you, but you got to move to second base. You were a really bad defensive player. And I think defense at second base is going to matter a whole heck of a lot more going forward. But I also think Dansby Swanson would be a great fit for Seattle. Carlos Correa would be a great fit, but a weird thing to see, to be completely honest with you. Honestly, it wouldn't be quite as weird as Carlos Correa signing with the Yankees, but it would be pretty close just because they've played so many games against each other and built a little bit of a rivalry. Is there any free agent that you guys think isn't getting talked about enough as being a kind of a big name that I think could get a big contract? I'll just say for me, Carlos Rodon, I think is going to be fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was incredible last year. And in his somewhat limited time in 2021, he was also really good in that year as well. But is going to be a really fascinating case just because of the fact that he's already 30 years old. Pilliot predicts a 3-year, $93 million contract. I think that sounds about right. But on top of Rodon, if you guys want to talk about him, great. Are there any other free agents that come to mind like that?
I think Chris Bassett's pretty fascinating. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's forever been one of the more underrated starters. And he had kind of an up-and-down season with the Mets. But a really good season overall. There wasn't like much to poke holes at there. There are a couple of Japanese and Korean players that I'm still learning about, honestly. So those would like naturally be flying under the radar because not many casual or even people who get paid to write about baseball know a ton about them.
Right.
We'll hear more about those names. They usually kind of lag behind free agency because you have the posting process. But I don't know. Does Clayton Kershaw like finally step away from Los Angeles? There was talk of him going to Texas last year.
Yeah.
He had a really good season when he was healthy. Maybe he'll get a multi-year contract. Like, it was kind of surprising to me that what he had to settle for last winter. So just Josh Bell, like he wasn't great in San Diego, but there are a lot of teams, even those teams that I was talking about that want to shift from rebuilder to contender. A lot of them need help, like in the first base DH department, and he's going to be one of the better ones available there. There are going to be bargain buys for those types, but he stands out to me as well.
So real quick on Senga, just because I've talked to some scouts about him, kind of profiles more as a mid-rotation guy than an ace, but might have a higher floor than some of the other Japanese pitchers that have come over. Most of those guys are high ceiling type of guys like Hideo Nomo and those type of guys, or Shohei Ohtani. But he's more of a mid rotation guy. And then the other guy whose name I, of course, just forgot right now, that is interesting on the internet, Masataka Yoshida.
Yeah.
Also interesting, but again, this is not a future superstar type of guy. Like, these are not guys that I think are going to be setting the world on fire when they come over. They're certainly interesting and certainly guys that you're going to want to roster, but it's worth pointing out Senga's already 30. Yoshida turned 29, I believe, this year. So these are also not like young guys that are going to be entering the system, but certainly interesting. Do you guys have a, I don't know what the right term is, like international players, how concerned do you become about that adjustment that you've made? Because I think we've seen such a wide variety of outcomes with guys. Heck, we saw it with Seiya Suzuki. We saw him be as good as it gets for at portions of the year and really struggle. What are you guys' takes on those type of players?
There's always a question about how it'll translate, even after you see Otani come over and all the success that he's had. Okay. And Tanaka, you know, was good, but not as good as maybe people thought he could be. I don't know how much of that was due to the elbow or what, but I think there's always a question. I think obviously Shohei Otani is a special case, and you can't, maybe that's just one of the things. It's like when we see Acuna and Tatis come up and any team brings up a prospect and you have these high expectations. I think that's going to happen for these players who are stars over in Japan. They come over here. I think there's going to be some really high expectations. Seiya Suzuki is kind of fit in there, like what you're saying. So there's always a question about that. And I don't think that's going to change this off season. I think the interesting question with Yoshida is he's going through the posting process while Kode Senga is an international free agent. So they're kind of a little different situations. Teams will have to bid to actually negotiate with Yoshida. So a little different situation. And there's also a timetable associated with that. I think there's like a 30-day window for teams to submit bids. So those processes will be handled a little bit differently, but definitely worth keeping an eye on that.
I think we've learned that there's no blanket way to say, does the KBO translate? This is how it translates. Like, it's case by case. And we should know that with, as you said, the way that we evaluate prospects when they first come up. Yeah. You know, it's a different thing for every different player. And you kind of just got to see how it plays out. I don't think even like major league scouts really know how to project numbers for a given player. Like there's like no blueprint for it. And we'll see, honestly. Like it's a boring answer, but no one has the answer.
So we like to focus on the free agency because, you know, that's right in front of us and we know it's going to be happening. But every year there's a bunch of trades that are just as interesting as the free agent signings, if not more so. Of course, we did get word that the Angels have said no to dealing Shohei Ohtani. We have heard no's before. There may have been a certain outfielder for the Washington Nationals that we heard a bunch of no's for that ended up getting moved. Wouldn't completely rule it out. But there's guys like Sean Murphy and Brian Reynolds and those type of guys who are going to be trade candidates. Drew, is there anybody who really stands out to you as a player that could be changing teams that could make a big impact next year?
Well, maybe it's not all that exciting, but I think Sean Murphy of the A's, I think he's going to go, and I think the A's are going to do pretty well there. Like, he had a huge season from a wins above replacement standpoint. Mm-hmm. And as I said at the top of the show, beyond Wilson Contreras, there's not a lot there on the catching market. In the same vein, I think the Blue Jays, they've already come out and kind of said, or reporters have come out and said that, you know, they have three catchers, if not four catchers, and they're going to trade one.
Right.
Danny Jansen seems like the most likely player to go because he's had trouble staying on the field. But when healthy over the last couple of years, he's been really effective. You could go down the whole A's roster, honestly, back to Oakland. Like I talked about, there's some teams that want to, you know, transition into semi-contender from rebuilding mode. It's going to get worse in Oakland before it gets better. So you could look down their entire roster. Ramon Laureano could certainly go. We've heard his name pop up in trade rumors for years. And then, you know, Cole Irvin, Paul Blackburn, go to the bullpen, Zach Jackson, AJ Puck, Danny Jimenez. Like I would suspect that any team that brings an offer to the table for the A's, they're going to listen and probably pull the trigger on whatever the best offer is.
Yeah, and I feel like the A's have like two or three catchers who are pretty close. So you know, they could deal from this excess to get a good package, whether it's pitching or any other type of position player. I think the Marlins are a team to watch with Pablo Lopez as he gets more expensive. Lopez was mentioned around the trade deadline as a possibility to be traded. It seems like they're going to revisit that this winter. And kind of thinking about teams that match up well, I think the Orioles match up well for the Marlins and Pablo Lopez, because they have a lot of position player talent in their system which could be useful for the Marlins, who, you know, have struggled to develop that for the most part. So I think the Orioles are a team to watch, because the Orioles are a team who should be spending money this winter. Whether they will, I really don't know, but they should be. So hopefully this is a step in that direction, but they're a team I'd watch for Lopez.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call. They definitely, that contention window begins now. It really kind of began a little bit last year, and I was so disappointed with what they did at the trade deadline, even though it's worth pointing out Jorge Lopez was not good after that deal. But it would have been really fun to see Baltimore a little more into this thing. Just because he's kind of close to, especially where I'm at, I think Jesse Winker is a really fascinating buy low candidate, who is probably the most guaranteed player to be traded on this list, because it's bad. Bridge burnt real bad, real bad. Just did not end up working out. And a guy who, you know, drew 84 walks, which is an impressive number, especially for a guy who ended up missing injury time, but just did not hit for average or hit for power at all. And the metrics suggest that he was a little unlucky in the power category and a little unlucky in the average category as well. It's, if you play all year, you have, and you hit 218, there's at least a little bit of bad luck in that type of situation. But I think he's a really interesting buy low candidate, because look, this guy was not an elite, but a very, very good offensive player for Cincinnati over those past few years. And I think he needs to be a designated hitter wherever he goes, because he's one of the worst defensive outfielders I've watched with my two eyes. He literally cannot get in front of a baseball. It's very odd to watch, but there is no doubt about his offensive ability. I think a team like the Twins makes a lot of sense for Jesse Winker, a guy that you can hit second and, you know, he, at the very least, he's going to get on base. That is one thing that he's definitely proven that he can do. But yeah, and I'll say this too, and I'll ask your guys' quick take on this one before we get into the draft. Rafi Devers, apparently extremely far apart. Now, after the Mookie Betts thing, I kind of wonder if Boston would be like, should we really do this? Should we? Is this really something? If they're that far apart and somebody's offering an elite package for Rafi Devers, I think that could be one of the big. So, and we always have it every year. We have that big surprise name that ends up getting dealt. I think that's one of the names that you got to at least keep an eye on.
If they don't bring back Bogarts,
yeah,
it's clear that they're. Yeah, I mean, they. I don't know. they're in a tough spot. Maybe that's why they're selling Liverpool.
That's a good point.
Like it's a weird kind of transition period, it feels like, in Boston, and they've been very good at that in the past, but I don't, they're in a tough spot.
Yeah
I mean, why trade Mookie Betts if you don't keep Rafael Devers?
That's a great question, and that's why it's these reports, and it's from numerous people, that they are just super far apart on anything getting done. I think that the Red Sox, the Austin Riley thing really screwed things up for them, because they were offering him a contract well below what Austin Riley got. And all due respect to Austin Riley, well, maybe one of us took him in this 30-player draft. Rafi Devers is going to get a bigger contract than Austin Riley. He just that's just naturally going to happen. So it'll be really interesting to see. Part of me kind of wants it to happen. I think it would be really chaotic to see that happen. But for fans of the Red Sox, I totally understand why you're cursing my name right now.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Yeah, the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands this weekend by predicting what will happen in college football, on the PGA Tour, and in Premier League. There is also $100,000 up for grabs by guessing the outcome between the Chargers and 49ers in our Sunday Night 7 contest. So let's draft. Let's take a look. This was a lot of fun to do. I will sell you that we did this draft online, and I want to give a shout out to Drew Silva. You only screwed up once. Can we just give him a nice clap? Ooh. Just only screwed up one time. They only took one player that had already been selected. So this draft, we did 10 rounds. We did a pick per person. We did not do serpentine. We just went through in order. With the first pick, Mr. Drew Silva had the first pick. He took Trey Turner. And Drew, was that obvious? Did you debate some other players, or was that just as soon as you got the first pick, that's the guy you knew you were taking?
No, I debated a lot of different players, and you know, there's a lot of groupthink in fantasy baseball, and maybe by the time next spring rolls around, the industry will have settled on who should be number one. But
sure,
maybe not this year or next year. I don't know if there is going to be a consensus number one. Turner feels really safe. Like, the floor there is five category stud,
high floor, high ceiling.
I don't know if like the ceiling is super high. Like, he's not going to be a 35 homer hitter, but what you get as a baseline, and you know, he's a free agent, he could go anywhere, but I'm pretty sure he's going to land somewhere that's going to have a lot of, you know, talent in the supporting cast, and sure, he's going to hit at the top of the lineup, and maybe he moves to a better hitting environment, like ballpark wise. And we've got a balanced schedule next year, so that kind of adjusts your expectations, but I don't want to take too much time. Trey Turner was just, he's a five category stud at his like lowest. And so lock him.
Yeah. It was the person I would have taken. So number two was pick me, and this was hard. I'm not going to lie to you. This was really difficult, but I ended up going with Jose Ramirez just because of basically the stuff Drew just said. I like the floor of Jose Ramirez. I know that there's ceiling there as well. I'm a little concerned that the stolen bases are going to be not as prolific going forward, but I like at least one more year of him being a 30 homer, 25 stolen base guy who hits for average. Drove in a bunch of runs this year too, and I'll be interested to see if he can keep that going forward. But DJ, you broke my heart with the third pick, Mr. Julio
Rodriguez. I thought you were going to go here at two, man.
So here's the thing.
I debated it
super hard, and I thought, oh, they're going to make fun of me. They're going to call me a homer for taking this guy with the second pick. That's what's going to happen.
I was
going to
take him number one, and then I was like, I'll just let Chris have him at two.
I mean, let's just talk about the unbelievable ceiling, DJ, of Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what he did in his rookie season, 28 homers, 25 steals in just 132 games. Like, he just hit the ground running. So you think about what he could do over a full season. I mean, he could be 40-40. I mean, he could be. It doesn't mean he will be, but like, no, he has that in him.
Someday he'll do it. I guarantee it. Someday he will be it.
Ooh. Right. So, I mean, I don't think it's crazy if he went number one, but
no.
I don't think Jose Ramirez at two is crazy either. You know, he did have the thumb surgery,
yes,
which impacted his production in the second half. So him coming back, you know, 100%, I think you should feel good about that going into next year. But yeah, I mean, I think Julio Rodriguez is going to be the first pick in a lot of leagues based off of, yeah, I mean, just what he did right out of the gate here,
right,
and not a full season. My expectations would be a 30-30 season, but there's more. There's ceiling there, basically.
Plus, have you seen that guy's eyes? Like, that guy, he is everything baseball should be. Like, I am super biased getting to watch the guy, but I am just such a big J-Rod fan in it. And we're going to, we'll publish these and we'll reverse it. I took Julio Rodriguez with the second pick. with picks 4, 5, and 6, I think this was really interesting. So Drew took Aaron Judge. I took Ronald Acuna Jr. and DJ took Juan Soto. I think the order of these can be really debated pretty interestingly. I think Aaron Judge at 4 is something that's easy to justify as after 62 homers. And he also stole a bunch of bases.
He could have gone higher too. I mean, he had 20 more home runs than anybody else. Sure. Like that's a big deal, but
right.
I mean, stealing 30 bases is a big advantage too, but I think it's an interesting debate, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, me taking Acuna Jr. there is a bet on this being the power just being sapped from that awful injury and believing that he's going to still be able to run and still be that 5 category player. And Juan Soto is really interesting to me because of the fact that shift is going away. I'm really going to be curious to see how teams pitch him. I think he could be even a higher on base percentage guy just because of the fact that you are not going to have the ability to shift that guy as high as much as you want. In fact, technically not at all. It'll be interesting to see how much we'll see 2 outfield and that somebody playing in that spot anyway. But I think that's a really interesting case between those guys, because I think all 3 of those guys, you could even argue as being the guys who finished number 1 next year.
Yeah.
I think the order is really fascinating there.
Yeah, me too. I picked Soto. I was debating between Soto, Tucker, and Betts. Right. And Witt. Like, I think there's a case for Bobby Witt Jr. too. So that was not an easy call, but I do think Soto, I don't think it's very reasonable to think he's going to go back to being the best hitter in baseball.
Yeah.
Settled in for a full year in San Diego, getting Tatis back to sort of lengthen that lineup. Certainly I think he'll begin next year in better position than he was with the Nationals going into this year, where basically he had to do everything.
So speaking of those names you just mentioned, that's the bottom of our first round. Basically, if we're doing let's assume we're in a 10-team league for this. Kyle Tucker goes with the 7th pick. Mookie Betts goes with the 8th pick. Yordan Alvarez with the 9th pick. And then, Drew, you take Bobby Witt Jr. with that 10th pick. And I certainly think it's, again, very easy to justify based on his rookie season, particularly considering how bad he was at the start of the season, the adjustments he makes. But that is putting a lot of pressure on this young fella, Bobby Witt Jr. You think he can be a top 10 player this year?
Oh, I'm glad, DJ, you said that you were also considering him that high, because it felt a little weird to click on that name, because he wasn't even a top 3 finalist for AL Rookie of the Year. But man, you look at the counting stats: 20 home runs, 30 stolen bases, 80 RBIs, 82 runs scored. Mm-hmm. Over his first 150 major league games. And that's while he had a .294 on base percentage, a .254 batting average. You could just kind of look at that stat line, look at his age. He's still 21, isn't he?
Right.
Or maybe he just turned 20. Yeah. He doesn't even turn 20. He doesn't turn 22 until next June.
Wow.
So, all right. If he gets on base a little bit more, hits for a little bit more contact, loses a little swing and miss, like the sky is the limit for what he can be as a fantasy asset. The Royals in general are kind of in a weird spot. Like, maybe they're actually, they've kind of already started with finally trading Whit Merrifield for pennies on the dollar.
Right.
Like, we'll see. I doubt they're going to add a ton over the winter. So he might be kind of hurting for a little help in that lineup, but him personally, he can be a number 1 overall pick if he just gets on base a little, if that batting line just improves to the level that the counting stats showed as a rookie.
Yeah, absolutely. My concern with Witt is more long term, the fact that I'm not going to guarantee it. I think there might be a move to the outfield coming, and that's going to, I think, play a little bit of effect. He was a very, very poor defensive player last year, like very poor. And if you look at the metrics, one of the worst infielders actually in baseball. And that's a reason why, even with those impressive numbers, he ended up with a fairly low WAR, which probably hurt his rookie of the year chances quite a bit. But there's an awful lot to like about his offensive upside, as high of an offensive upside, I think, in fantasy as anyone maybe outside of Julio. Starting with the second part of our draft. At 11, I took Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I am a big believer in that bat and will be forever. I believe there's a huge bounce back coming. Have looked at some other advanced metrics that suggest that he is going to be undervalued. Obviously, at 11, I can't take the risk there. At 12, Freddie Freeman, who was the other person I was debating in that pick. And then we get some pitchers finally. Corbin Burnes goes 13th, but was Bichette sandwiched between Gerrit Cole. DJ, were you planning to take Cole as the first pitcher, or would you have taken Burnes if he was still there at 15?
I would have taken Burnes just because of the division. I think the NL Central is a big advantage for pitchers, even still going into next season. Obviously, the AL East can be problematic, and you know we've seen that with Gerrit Cole. He'll have his days where you know he'll get blasted a little bit, but we know he's going to throw 200 innings, strike out 230 plus batters, probably win a lot of games for the Yankees. So he feels pretty safe if you don't get Burnes, but I think Burnes is definitely at the top of the list for now.
Yeah. In these like way too early mock drafts, a lot of times the pitchers go real late because it's more fun when it doesn't matter. And you're just kind of trying to create content to just go with position players. Cause
sure,
it's hard to debate pitchers at this point in the year, but I think we'll see next spring, but I think Burnes is going to be a consensus number one because he's already showed that, you know, what he did in 2020 and 2021 was no fluke. He just further built on it, got to 200 innings. And the strikeouts actually came down a little, but I'm not worried about that. Like DJ said, I think you can lock him in to be among the league leaders in that category, and the ERA is going to be good, and he's going to win a lot of games. Again, we have a balanced schedule next year. He doesn't get to face the Pirates a ton and the Reds a ton and even the Cardinals offense a ton. And the Cubs are not going to be good. But he still does get to face those teams, and he's in a very comfortable spot there with the Brewers. And, yeah, I think he should be the consensus number one starting pitcher.
I agree with that as well. Mike Trout goes 16th. Bryce Harper goes 17th. Austin Riley goes 18th. I think that's a really interesting turn right there in what was basically our sixth round. Mike Trout was excellent this year. Unfortunately, his fantasy value because of the stolen base stuff is dropping, and you have to deal with some health stuff as well. But a bunch of homers, slugged over 600, I believe, on the season, which is pretty darn good for a player. Bryce Harper, also an injury guy who I thought was very good, impressed in the postseason. We always seem to give the postseason bump, but I do believe that Bryce Harper is a player that I honestly considered in the first round. I think Bryce Harper's skill set is really impressive. It will be interesting to see. In some leagues, Bryce Harper may not have outfield eligibility to begin the year. So that'll, because of the injury that he had, depending on what type of league you play in, there is a chance that Bryce Harper will not have eligibility there. I think the Austin Riley pick is really interesting at 18, DJ. Talk about your process there.
Yeah, I was honestly debating between, you know, who went next year. 19 was Manny Machado. Devers was 20 after I picked Riley at 18. So third base run. Yeah. After that, it gets a little murky. I mean, I know Nolan Arenado's out there and all that stuff. But with Riley, I think there's just the most ceiling. Riley is a guy who you could easily see hitting 45 home runs. I don't see that happening with either of those guys. I think there's probably the safer floor perhaps with Machado and Devers.
Sure.
But I was shooting for the upside in a lineup with the Braves lineup when they get Ozzy Albies back and Acuna's at 100% and Matt Olson gets another year in Atlanta. Maybe they add an outfielder there and do some damage. That Braves lineup is, I mean, it's already good
for
this year, but it could be even better next year. So, I think Riley could hit 40 homers and drive in 120 runs. If not next year, it's going to happen at some point.
Would you have debated Riley there, Drew, if he was there instead of Machado?
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say looking back on it, but
sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think those three third basemen, it's kind of perfect that they all came off the board in order.
Yeah.
And Arenado did not get picked in this 30, right?
No, he didn't.
No, yeah. He did not.
I mean, all, you know, fairly solid floors. And I would agree that I think Riley has the highest ceiling.
Yeah.
Because of the age and the lineup around him, like you know, Devers might be in trouble from like a supporting cast standpoint.
That's a great
going
point.
Into next season. Machado is just super solid, and he's probably, you know, if you want to place an early prop on a guy to lead the league in RBIs, like he would be a pretty good play. But yeah, I got nothing else to add on that point.
No, that's a totally fair. I was going to take Devers over those guys, but I think you guys make a great point about the supporting cast and just the fact that like it's time to, it's funny. There was a bunch of people who were talking about Austin Riley and not believing in that for a second year guy. And I got it because of how much he struggled, especially for hitting for average, but this is clearly a different player and a guy I think that you can consider near the top of the second round for sure going forward. Speaking of Machado, let's go into our back end. Sandy Alcantara has nothing to do with Manny Machado, but he was off the board very early at 21 after his sensational, and I believe Cy Young season, the polar bear Pete Alonso goes 22. And then at 23, Christopher Crawford selects Fernando Tatis Jr. Guys, did I take him too early?
No. I was hoping one of you would, so that you would have to talk about the show. Because I mean, it's kind of an obvious situation, right? Like he's had four surgeries since the last time we saw him on a major league field, maybe even more than that. like the
depends on how many motorcycles he's
yeah. Riding. Oh man, yeah.
So he's still really young. He's still has the potential to, you know, turn his career around. I shouldn't even phrase it that way, but like he has all the tools to come right back. He can be activated April 27th or something.
I think it's April 20th.
Yeah. And be the best player in baseball or at least fantasy baseball the rest of the way. So you're going to miss like maybe 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks. And then, you know, you got a guy that should have maybe gone number one overall. You got him in the third round. So
yeah,
that's the situation.
Yeah. I mean, totally agree. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. To get him only missing a couple of weeks, like Drew said, I don't know if, you know, as drafts get closer, I think his name is going to move up.
Yeah, I agree.
I think so as well. And look, this is one of those things too, where like, thank you Padres for advancing as far as you did, because you basically took off a week of that suspension because of those new rules. But I mean, look, I get that there's a ton of risk with that guy. His upside is as good, if not better, than anybody. And the fact that I do believe he'll have shortstop eligibility is big. And the fact that I'll be really curious to see what they do with him. Do you guys think he's going to be a shortstop next year, or do you think he'll be in the outfield?
I think they're going to try him at shortstop again. Yeah. But it feels like it's too early to make the call.
It's very early, and I think some of this will depend on
the shoulder rehab, probably.
On the shoulder rehab, and would it shock you guys if you saw the Padres be a player for one of these big four shortstops? I mean, it's not necessarily the first team that comes to mind, but the Padres are never the first team that comes to mind, and they seem to get every big player that seems to hit the market these days. Maybe they could change the outcome of that awful Trey Turner trade, where they should have had Trey Turner in that 13 deal. Maybe they want to right the wrong of that. But yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see. I don't care if he's playing outfield, shortstop, whatever. Definitely going to
be. I feel like Ha-Seong Kim is a pretty good shortstop.
Yeah. He's a solid defender, and I think he's shown some stuff with the bat as well for me to say that we're good there. But I just cannot rule out the Padres for doing something big and dumb. And I wouldn't even call it dumb. I cannot rule out them doing something big and unexpected.
I wonder if the Padres would consider putting Tatis, at least initially, at DH. I
mean, yeah, sure.
Maybe not every day in the field.
No.
And
that would not surprise me.
No. He is exciting, but also reckless on the field. Like, that's what is the safer option, to be a center fielder or be shortstop? I really have no idea.
I think probably you can make shortstop,
honestly. Yeah.
You can make arguments for both, and it's going to, because you're making a lot of dives with that as well, but you're running into a flipping wall when you're playing in the outfield.
Yeah, probably center field. Yeah.
So Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to catch next year. Shane McClanahan with the 24th pick. I was a little surprised by this one, DJ, and I, again, it's easy to justify, but just because of how he looked necessarily in the second half compared to the first half. But I'm guessing you do not have the same concerns that I do, Mr. Short.
I mean, I do. I just think a full offseason of rest will do good for him. I'm assuming health, he gets a jump in the workload. You know, he's going to strike out over 200 batters. Hopefully we'll get some wins too. I don't think anything he did this year was fluky or anything like that. The underlying metrics supported what he did.
Right.
So I'm just hoping that an off season of rest, you know, gets him to 100%. It kind of picks up where he left off.
Were you considering McClanahan at that point before he got taken, Drew?
I would have drafted him if he lasted to my next turn.
Yeah. Next pick. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's where he belongs with the stuff, the strikeout potential. And he's probably going to have to carry a big workload. Like the Rays are going to need that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was the 25th pick, was that you took Brandon Woodruff, which yeah. is the guy I probably would have taken, to be completely honest with you. I just believe in his floor a little bit higher with the ceiling. But I think it's an easy one to justify. The order of those guys could be debated and certainly will be debated for a while. I took Shohei Ohtani at 26. It is worth pointing out that we're going by Yahoo rules, so he is a DH only in this. I'm still fine with having Shohei Ohtani. I honestly considered Shohei Ohtani the pitcher version as well with a later pick, just because I don't think people realize just how good he was on the mound last year. Like the reason why he is a legitimate MVP candidate still to me is because he was one of the best pitchers in baseball. So if you can get him as both, I think we're talking about a much higher selection than 26.
Yeah. Yeah. Would he be in the top 10?
No. Yeah. Top 10. Oh.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's closer to top like three or four for me. Yeah. But there's no doubt about the risk too. Like there is always going to be risk with Shohei Ohtani because of that workload with being a hitter and as a pitcher, there is going to be a ton of injury risk. Rounding out our draft, we have Francisco Lindor goes 27th. Michael Harris, 28th. I take Marcus Semien, 29th. And Dylan Cease goes with that last spot. Michael Harris at 28th, I think, is really interesting. And a guy I considered with several more picks. Drew, I think you have to be pleased with the value there.
Yeah, I didn't know. I'm probably not going to know what to do with him even next spring. But it felt like he should go top 30. Is this kind of a Cedric Mullins situation? And Mullins had a solid year to back up his incredible breakout, but it kind of feels like it has similar veins in it. But yeah, 19 home runs, 20 stolen bases, and 114 games as a rookie might take home that NL Rookie of the Year if they don't give it to Spencer Strider. The batting average was .297. Advanced metrics don't necessarily love his entire profile. They love his defense.
Yes.
They say that he runs fast. I don't know if he's going to be a 20 homer hitter. I don't know if you can count on that. I don't know if you can even count on the batting average or him getting on base at a great clip, even with the speed. But man, the raw tools and what he did as a first time major leaguer, I felt like I had to grab him there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a great pick. The 107 to 21 strikeout to walk ratio does concern me.
Yeah.
That's a concern for a few players I have, like Jose Miranda and a few other guys. But for Harris, the talent is just so impressive. And Atlanta has done a great job of developing these type of players as well. Their scouting system is outstanding, and they just seem to get the best of those type of guys. So if he goes show just like a semblance more of an approach at the plate, I think he can be easily worth a second round pick. And like in a dynasty draft, if you're doing a start over dynasty type draft thing, I think he'd be somebody I'd be considering with a first round pick.
The thing about Dansby Swanson. So when Ozzie Albies went down, Swanson moved up to the number two spot in the lineup and like really found a home there. And from a fantasy perspective, I wrote this in our team roundups, like the volume that Swanson got from hitting second is really what propelled him to this kind of upper echelon of fantasy shortstops. Mm-hmm. But if he signs elsewhere, which is a possibility, you could maybe see Michael Harris going to the number two spot behind Acuna, in front of Matt Olson and Austin Riley and William Contreras and William Contreras and Darnold, all those guys, and Albies when he's back and healthy. So like that could be a huge boost to Harris to get that volume at the top. I think it's worth watching the lineup spot for him. But yeah, if he can answer these questions about his approach, and remember, he's still really young, so I'm sure he'll make progress in that area, but it may not happen overnight. That's the one concern I have about kind of where he is right now.
Absolutely. Francisco Lindor and Marcus Semien, I think, is an interesting one here. I think Lindor is a guy that I think is going to go underrated in drafts after having a really solid season. And Marcus Semien, if you take out that dreadful, and dreadful doesn't even begin to describe how bad Marcus Semien was over those first 2 months, was an outstanding option there as well. Big difference here is, of course, Marcus Semien is only going to have second base eligibility. Francisco Lindor at shortstop. I think that those two are going to be drafted kind of right around each other going forward. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, and I don't think second base is such a bad thing. Because second base is not great.
No, that's cool.
So, yeah, and I mean, I guess who's Jose Altuve? I was kind of debating my last.
I know, me too.
In that area, Spies and Altuve, yeah. Because the thing about Altuve is like he actually ran a bit this season, but it's hard to really count on that continuing. So that was the separator for me between not only Altuve and Dylan Cease, but also Lindor. I just think that Lindor is younger. The Mets lineup should continue to be good. He's not going to hit for as high of an average as Altuve, but I know he's going to run. So that was the separator there for me, is I just don't trust Altuve to necessarily steal double-digit bases again.
My separation between Semien and Altuve, and this was very scientific and I had to break it down. My grandma hates Jose Altuve. Hates him with every fiber in her being, hates Jose Altuve. And if she found out she drafted him, I probably wouldn't get any chocolate cream pie for Thanksgiving. And
I find it hard to believe that your grandma hates anyone.
Well, she probably hate respects him. She just goes, "Ooh, that darn Altuve." She kind of sounds like the meddling kids in Scooby-Doo. "Oh, you darn Altuve."
Now that I believe. Yeah.
Not for you, that type of thing. She sent, but every once in a while I get a text with a curse word with Altuve's name in it as well. So it's impressive. I probably should change autocorrect so those words change to something else. I do want to point out that because I'm selfish and like talking about myself, I did not draft a pitcher this year, and I'm going to give you some numbers why. Okay, I'm going to read these in order. 51, 50, 25, 81, 6, 86, and 161. And those numbers I just read you are in order the stat line or finish in Yahoo in terms of points for pitchers. There's just too much value to be found in those later rounds for me to select somebody in the top 30 right now, unless you're getting a Corbin Burns or unless you're getting a Gerrit Cole, I guess, or Sandy Alcantara. I just think there's too much depth in starting pitching right now, which is a weird thing to say based on like what we were talking about long-term. Do you think it's a huge mistake to come out of the top 30 picks without a pitcher though?
I think I would want one. Okay. However, I think one thing we're not talking about yet, which I know we will talk a lot about, is the pitch clock that is coming. Also, the shift, changes. But I wonder what the pitch clock is going to do to these pitchers that are max effort with every pitch that they throw. That probably predominantly includes relievers, but because they can, pitch in short bursts, but I think it will include some pitchers too, or starting pitchers as well.
Sure.
And I think that will impact the stat line by the end of the year.
Yeah, it's an eternal fantasy baseball debate, and I don't really have a great answer for it. It's especially in a snake draft, you gotta go with draft slot, and it's like best player available. And sometimes for me, that's a starting pitcher. If you want to say that. And you've got to construct a roster that has all elements of, the stat categories that you need to win the league. And I feel like I always come out of the first three rounds with at least one ace. That's just the way I like to build a fantasy roster. sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. Like, it depends on who you pick. It's right. case by case. But I understand, and I've read a few articles already about, you know, people who I respect in this industry that are going to maybe fade pitchers more than they have in the past because of the pitch clock and, you know, because the return on investment has never really been there unless we're talking about like a few standout guys year to year.
Yeah.
And we should add here, like, there were a lot of pitchers who were not taken
sure.
here who are really, really good.
Yeah.
Max Scherzer.
Jacob DeGrom, Julio Urias, Alec Manoa, all guys that I think you can consider. And that's partially, again, it's, and even the ranking of six I gave you, Shohei Ohtani, is misleading because he was not ranked the sixth best player as a hitter. That was just how he was ranked in that list. Is there one player in particular that you were surprised didn't get selected? I'll selfishly say, go first and say Paul Goldschmidt. I thought somebody would take him after that great year, but anybody else surprised to see someone not drafted?
I guess Arenado.
Yeah, Arenado and Goldschmidt. People just hate the Cardinals, man.
Well, it's an easy team to hate. It is just a...
No, I mean, they're not getting any younger, and the Cardinals say they're going to boost the supporting cast this winter, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Sure. I will say, too, if there's somebody, and I'll ask you guys this as well, if there's somebody that we didn't draft that we think will go higher, and I'm not even going to say he's going to go in the top 30 to begin drafts next year, but I will say this. I would not be surprised if when we do our mid-season drafts, if Wander Franco is somebody we're talking about in the top 30. And I just wanted to talk about how quickly we have kind of given up on this guy as an elite talent. I know he wasn't great last year. I think it was almost assuredly due to injury stuff. I think he's going to end up being a top 30 player. Is there anybody else who stands out like you for that?
Luis Robert.
Yeah, it's a great call.
I was considering Robert in which slot, like pretty early on, honestly. And then he just kept dropping. And I was like, yeah, I mean, he hasn't really been very good. I mean, he was good like for short stretches. He's had trouble staying on the field. Maybe the injury luck flips and he's becomes one of the best players in baseball, but it hasn't really happened yet. You know, the tools are there. With Wander Franco, I'm buying the dip for sure. Like I love that people aren't going to be talking about him as much.
Yeah.
But I'm not in the top 30. Like he's not there yet.
I can't take him there, but I will make my prediction right now. He ends up finishing as a top 30 player because I think he's going to be just an average king for a long time. There's so much talent there. I know the power was a little disconcerting. He actually ran a little bit more than I think people were expecting in that limited time, which was nice to see as well.
Yeah.
But he is the best prospect that I've ever scouted. And I think we should be more impressed with what he's done over his first 2 years than disappointed. A couple other players who didn't get drafted that I thought might get drafted. Adolis Garcia, the player who came, I believe, the closest to a 30-30 season. If not, it was Julio. Randy Arozarena, also a guy I think that would have been worth consideration. And then all of the pitchers that we mentioned as well. But this was a fun exercise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just a fun way to wrap up the season here. And also, I think, gets our brains kind of churning for a magazine that we're going to be writing.
Yes.
That you'll be able to get in the early part of next year on newsstands. As we start to, you know, the World Series is over. So now it's time to start to look ahead to next year.
We will be looking ahead to next year. And this is a good reminder that the show is going to be taking a hiatus until February, except for we're going to do a show to recap the winter meetings, December 4th through 7th. We will be doing something along those lines. Hopefully we have lots of moves to talk about because we're going to be it's going to be tough for us not to talk for a month, but we'll be going back to our regular schedule in February. I just wanted to real quick thank everybody for listening to our shows when we were doing daily shows, when we switched to the weekly show, to the two shows a week, whatever. You guys have been there and have provided great feedback. And I think I speak for both of us that we just really can't appreciate it enough.
Absolutely, man. Go Roto World. Go Cardinals.
Yes.
So thanks again for listening. Hit that 5-star button, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, whatever you have to do. Again, we really appreciate you guys listening. You can follow me at Crawford_MILB. You can follow DJ at DJ Short, and you can follow Drew Silva at Drew Silv. So again, we'll talk to you guys in a month. Hopefully we have a bunch of free agent signings and trades to break down.
Yes, please.
But again, we really appreciate it. Hit us up on Twitter, especially Drew. Drew loves to answer questions. He's really excited about the Kraken winning 5 straight and realizes that his Blues are going nowhere and in a hurry. So yes, that is the perfect way to end the show with Drew upset. Talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.